Welcome to Spaghetti Lunchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Welcome back, everybody. We missed you.
It's been a bit. We have been on a bit of a hiatus and we're happy to get back into recording here. And we're going to jump right in. And Ethan is looking at his phone, so I'm going to steal the thunder and say, we're starting with sacred objects.
My phone is sacred to me. Leave me alone.
That's true. It is quite sacred to you. What is a sacred object, Ethan?
An object that is revered or held separate from the rest of the normal mundane reality due to its historical, religious, or potentially even
political,
economic, political,
societal significance. Yeah.
Societal significance is fine.
I think that's a pretty good definition. What do you think of when you think of a sacred object, though? What comes to your mind? My mind now, after we had this, is like founding document of a country, like a constitution.
I mean, there are a lot of like people that hold the constitution, the Declaration of Independence sacred.
The crown jewels in England. Half of the Vatican's, you know, in vault.
All of their library.
Yeah, well, when their vault of like jewels and shit, whatever's in there.
I went to a museum when I was in Turkey once that claimed to have the staff of Moses and the beard hairs of Muhammad in it.
Did they? They claimed it. Did you see it?
Well, I saw what they claimed were the beard hairs of Muhammad and the staff of Moses. I saw those objects.
Yeah. Was it like a big museum?
It was a very large museum.
Then it was probably legit. I don't know. Like I feel like it would be really hard for a large museum in the Muslim world to just boldly claim we have the beard hairs of Muhammad and then be completely full of it. I don't know. I could trust them.
Okay. Have fun with that.
I'm not going to the museum anytime soon, but...
You're not. I don't.
Yeah, you know, whatever. But, it's not a particularly standout thing, I think, in genre fiction. It's usually in the background. The first thing that came to mind was the Elder Scrolls from the Elder Scrolls games, which you don't really get all that often. They are the name of the game, but they're not particularly in your face. The Silmarils from Lord of the Rings are a great example.
I think... a lot about, in addition to Silmarils, I also think Narsil is a great example.
Yeah, like a sword, a weapon can be
used by an ancient king, probably, or an ancient warrior of some sort.
Excalibur.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Luke Skywalker's lightsaber in the sequel trilogies is certainly treated with a degree of reverence and respect.
That it would be quite sacred.
There are numerous examples in D&D. I remember in one of the Critical Role games, one of the characters pulls out a reliquary, which was the finger bone of one of the last champions of the Raven Queen, to use that as a component for spell casting. And I thought that was a fun detail.
I feel like oftentimes sacred objects are required to cast spells in D&D and maybe in some other games.
Provide a connection to the divine or to another plane of some sort.
Because to cast these like, you know, high level or like to cast spells of any kind that connect to a god, you need a more sacred object.
Yeah. They're often given a lot of power, whether or not
the Deathly Hallows are a bit of kind of in that of like there's another level. It's not just a power. There's an etherealness, a spirituality. There's something beyond that kind of connects this thing.
Yeah, the Chris knives in Dune, certainly. If an outsider sees a Chris knife, they have to die. Because so much of the Fremen religion is based around the sandworms on Arrakis. The Chris knives being made from the teeth of the sandworms makes them incredibly sacred.
Okay, I didn't know that. This is interesting.
Anyway. You just finished Dune Prophecy.
I don't remember that being a piece of it.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't get past the first 20 minutes.
Then how would you know?
I just assumed they covered it.
They didn't. It's mostly Bene Gesserit.
On me.
Emperor drama. It's okay. I liked it enough. I finished it. But anyway.
You did. You've been pitching it. I tried it.
I didn't pitch it. I think I literally said, it's fine. I think I described it as, it's like what Game of Thrones was when it was at its peak with its political intrigue, but never hitting anywhere close to that level. Because it's very
I think that is how you described it.
It's beautiful. It's well shot. It's got like some interesting stuff going on, but the intrigue isn't that next level. The characters aren't that interesting.
Design looked good though.
The production design is just through the roof. It's great. It has Denis Villeneuve's style, so it's enjoyable, but it's not. It's not the second coming.
So, two very cool examples that just popped into my head right now. I don't know if you're are you watching season two of Severance?
No, yet? Not yet.
Okay, really good. But for spoilers for those who haven't, spoilers for season one.
Okay.
Spoilers for season one that for those who haven't seen it yet.
It's a real dick move. Have you seen this thing? I'm about to spoil it for you.
The employee manual for the innies in Severance is seen as a sacred text because it's written by the founder, Keir Egan, and it's got all of these.
Yeah.
But it's actually just an employee manual, but it's treated and written like a Bible, which is fascinating and really fun.
And we're going to do sacred texts as a different episode another time.
I will reference that again. Don't worry.
Yeah, so don't worry. We'll do sacred texts.
Don't worry. I'll reference it again.
Ethan, give me your three words. Let's move on to the menu description before I lose it with you.
Well dipper.
That's good penmanship.
I bet yours is a quill.
You can bet all you want, but we're gonna make I'm you guessing go first that yours, now.
No, I abdicate.
Okay. So you're making me go first?
I'm making you
because
go
you
first.
Want to know.
Yeah. Because I want to know if I was right or not.
It's not really a quill, but it's a quill.
Yeah.
Because it's
10 points to Gryffindor.
But the thing of what I was trying to go with was I wanted to take a regular everyday object and make every single one of that object sacred. You know, much like in how the real world, historically, like in Christianity, clergy, that was where the writing was happening and that was where the reading was happening. That's where the books and like education really came through the church. I wanted to kind of lean into that a little bit, but where everybody's literate, the entire society's literate, but no one is allowed to write except for the clergy.
When you say literate, you mean they can read?
They can all read, but they cannot write. They're not allowed to write. They are able to write, but they're not allowed to do it.
How are they taught to write?
I good question. I don't know. Put that off the side. That's not important right now. So every single text that is written with a different pen. And it could be a quill, but I was thinking more like they actually learn how to make pens, proper pens.
Yeah.
They got ball bearings or something somehow. But they have twisty bottoms. I don't know. But every single text is written with a different pen, and every pen is then put in its own little case as like a glass little display. It becomes a sacred, instrument that was used to create this, because the text, it becomes a bit more mundane at a point because they've written a lot of these and then they'll write many copies. So say there's one book and they've made 25 copies. All of them are written with the same pen. And then that pen is retired forever.
Wait, sorry, you lost me. So each pen is only used to write one text. So if I were to write the Bible,
yes,
I would use the same pen to write 25 versions of the Bible and then retire that pen.
Correct.
What I was thinking, which might be fun, is that each pen is only used to write one piece of literature, whatever it may be.
Okay.
And then it is retired. It is effectively single use.
Interesting. Also cool.
Yeah.
I don't really have a limitation on this. You could also do it where each author has their own pen, and like the those who are allowed to write, they each have a pen. It's their pen, and that pen can be refilled. And when they are done or they die or something, their pen becomes sacred, and they become like Saint Augustus, who wrote these books. But this is his pen, and then all of the people who wrote the books throughout time become sacred, like they become saints and their pens are like the saintly artifact.
My mind immediately went to the ink that they use in their pen is actually their blood.
Oh yeah.
And so they're writing, so it is these saintly scribes, but it is only their pen that can be used with their blood. It is
oh yeah,
you cannot share pens. So all their scripts, all their writings, their prophecies, their predictions, it's all written in their blood. And then when they die, it is preserved as a reliquary or even potentially even buried with them. But that is part of the, you're making Jedi, but in a way, but instead of each Jedi, like how each Jedi makes their own lightsabers, the final test to join this order of scribes is you have to make your own pen.
Yeah.
Using your own blood. And figure it out, and you have to use it to produce a masterpiece. Yeah. It's as soon as you said that, it all started flowing.
Yeah,
everything sort of fell. Blood. Everything. So it was like you turned on the light in a warehouse and suddenly everything became clear to me.
So why don't we make it even darker where they die by bleeding out because they bleed all of their blood into the page.
Mm, yeah, that's
and
great.
So that is the fate of anybody who does this is you are choosing to ascend into sainthood.
Yeah.
At the cost of writing until you die.
Yeah.
And
whatever your and that is your magnum opus, your yes. final work.
Yeah. And you know, you just hope you get it done in time, you know.
That and maybe the final page is, you know, when a writer has finished or when a scribe has finished, because the last page is just filled completely red.
Oh God.
Because it just, the page absorbs all the final remnants and it just fills the entire page end to end. And so every religious text ends with a complete, a solid red page before it's bound.
Now, do we want to make it where they're all religious, or are they, because you said literature earlier, and are they writing novels, or are they just writing religious and, you know, educational texts? And that can be up to the individual world builder. I don't know. It might just depend.
I think it depends how big of an order you want to make it. If you want to make it so that they're all saints, then make it all religious. If you want to make it that this is a bigger order, then it can be texts, it can be musings and thoughts and pamphlets.
So you brought in the word order a couple times, yeah, and I didn't bring it up. And I think it's a good way to go with the way that I pitched it. It becomes an order. Mm-hmm. Now let's blast that order out of here. No longer an order. Now,
you mean it's a disorder?
Now it's in disorder. Damn's in disarray. So what if we have... Ian's looking at his wedding ring like he's fucking Gollum. It's very creepy.
It is precious to me.
So what if it's decentralized and sure. there isn't actually, maybe it's not that people aren't allowed to write, but it's that nobody wants to write because they know you have to write in your own blood. So it's more of a self-selecting situation. And then the sacredness of the pen is determined by the quality of the work and how much that person becomes revered, where like some of those pens become not particularly sacred because what they wrote was bad or, you know, sacrilegious or uninteresting or whatever. And you can kind of play on the edges of that of, you know, giving it a bit more up to the individuals. But I don't know. It depends on like if you're putting this in a world that has like a strong church, temple, you know, clerical order or whatever, then the first version really works. But if you wanted to put it in a different world where that isn't on the table, you could still deploy the idea and just change up the allowance of it versus just the people not wanting to do it.
An easy way to do that would be that instead of it functionally serves the same purpose, ink is made out of a very volatile or dangerous material, and so handling it is just very dangerous, so it becomes a higher risk activity. And so a lot of people would rather stick to cuneiform style etchings instead of using pen and calligraphy.
Here's one last pitch before we move on off of this idea, is that sticking with just the original idea that there's the order, they control it, yada yada. People, there is an upstart of people who have discovered ink.
Not a startup.
There's a startup of people who have started this ink business where people have figured out how to make ink pens using, so not using blood. And they're actually creating this like sacrilegious, you know, like this enlightenment era movement to start writing regular work, you know, writing works with regular pens, not having all the sacredness and all the religiosity associated with it, and popularizing it and, you know, democratizing it. So then you have a conflict between, these two groups of who's controlling knowledge, who's controlling how this is disseminated, much like you had during the Enlightenment era of, you know, the old guard versus...
Suddenly everybody can write? What the hell?
Yeah, and they don't want everyone to write. And maybe some people don't because they respect this as sacred or whatever, but you could do something with
that. It's interesting.
It's not, I don't love it, but it's.
No, but you could add, I'm still stuck with the order idea because now I'm thinking about, well, what if on the final page it wasn't just completely red? What if it was a vision of their face, and so a portion of their spirit lived on in their magnum opus? Because it's going places.
Yeah, I like it when people really dissolve. It's all about the pen.
Yeah, I know. It's just going places. Yeah. The snowball is snowballing.
Well, it's done snowballing because now we're gonna move on to your noodles, Ethan.
Do you remember during our temples episode, remind the folks the temple that you.
My temple where there was a big well in the middle that went like a big ramp that went down into a well that had this like mercury like substance at the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The sacred object is the ladle or the spoon or the gourd that was used by the person who discovered the well to take the liquid out for the very first time.
Okay.
That is the sacred object.
Okay. Great bringing back an old idea.
But it's my point in doing that is to illustrate that sacredness
can be simple.
Is most often tied with mundane. I mean, I think about the scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where Indiana Jones is presented with all the goblets and he goes, that's the cup of a carpenter. And he grabs the simple earthen clay goblet and that's the Holy Grail. Yeah. That for me, sacredness from a religious perspective is something that is at its core conferred upon a simple object, just in the same way that a sacred ground or a holy space is made sacred or holy by the presence of the divine, and then that can be taken away, right? That's why I immediately, as soon as we decided to do this episode, I was like, oh, the ladle.
Okay.
Like, that was it. Because that ladle would have such significance to the followers of that faith.
Yes.
It would be the sign of leadership within the order. It would be that which cradles the stars, right? Like, it would be it would be that the ladle would be have such significance.
Yeah. I think it's a good time to point out, if you haven't listened to the Temples episode, I guess listen to the Temples episode, because that's gonna be helpful context for this conversation. I think it's cool, and I think you're 100% right in that the mundanity is what makes it. Now I want to get into more of the detail of this object itself, because we do have the religion and the place built out already.
Detailed in our temples episode.
But so we'll try to instead just add in new stuff that isn't referenced there. Of, you know, is this then kept with like the leader of the temple?
I imagine
they have
so.
I imagine
I imagine that it is passed from leader to leader. It is the sign. It is the symbol of leadership, like a scepter is a symbol of royal Regalness. Authority.
Yeah. So are you?
And it is used in ritual practice. It is used at the central temple.
So
still on a daily basis, but also there are other ladles out there that are carved or made in its image and are used to confer leadership of maybe a smaller temple or a sub temple or of seniority within the order. You are gifted
a ladle that has been dipped into the fountain or into the well. So the original one is the one that is the one. It's the one, and it is probably the simplest one because at the time it wasn't a religion. There would be nothing ornate about it.
Right.
And maybe all the subsequent ones, back to the Indiana Jones thing, the subsequent ones are more ornate and they're nicer ladles and spoons or whatever. And so if you get one of those, it is actually an inverse, like the more ornate, the sign that it is a less important temple.
Correct.
Because only the most important temple has the simplest of ladles, because it symbolizes the simplicity. Well,
it was a big deal, for example, when Pope Francis did away with a lot of the formal regalia that the Pope often wears.
He's a simple man. He understood the point.
But that's...
Everyone should watch Conclave, by the way. You and I need to talk about this movie after.
We will. But to that point, that's vibe, that approach is what I'm going for. It is not, I don't think Jesus sat on a throne of gold back in the day.
No, that's
kind back of in the, Bethlehem.
That's kind of the whole thing that he's against.
Right. So this is sort of in keeping with that approach, that belief. Moses' staff was not made of silver. It was a stick.
You've seen it.
Touche. Because these things always began as tools. It's not that they weren't glowing at the time. It was just a staff.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the item we're talking about here and not that. So he carries it around. Mm-hmm. Like on a belt, basically.
I imagine he actually walks with it in his hand, sort of holding it behind his back.
How big is the ladle?
It's like a normal ladle. It's like a, like, I don't know. Like a, like, I'm holding my hands about 2 feet apart.
Yeah, I enjoy when on podcasts when people do visual representations of stuff.
I just described.
No, I know. This is me making about a joke that I really do enjoy it whenever like a podcast does a completely physical thing, and then everyone's like, "Well, sorry, that wasn't helpful for any of you."
Yeah, right.
About 2 feet.
Okay. So I figure it's about two feet long.
So they dug the well. They got to the thing. They like tap into this liquid, and he has a ladle.
Well, that's why I've been saying gourd at the same time, also because I am.
When you say gourd, you mean a pumpkin? I'm confused as to what you mean.
In parts of the world, spoons are actually carved out of gourds, or the gourds, hollowed out gourds, are used as spoons.
Okay, that's what you mean.
That's what I mean. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So a hollowed out gourd.
Yes. Not a solid. I'm not saying dip a full butternut squash into mercury here.
And to be fair, it isn't actually mercury. It's a mercury-like substance in its viscosity.
Fair.
In particular. But it was more like stars. It was like kind of like,
I think we called it the Well of Twilight or something.
Yeah, it was like very like twilighty stars, moon twinkly. Dust. Yeah, it's got a twinkly liquid.
Unicorn blood. No, I was imagining this is something presumably, I think what would determine its shape, here we go, what would determine its form is more how was the temple discovered? Was it something that they were digging for? Or was he a wanderer? Or was the person that found it a wanderer, a traveler, who discovered the well?
That's a
question for you as the progenitor of the idea.
Well, the idea is beyond me now. I put it out in the public like 2 months ago. Now it's...
But I'm still...
The public owns it.
What would you... I didn't say owner. I said progenitor. So what would you... Oh my God. What would you...
I think it was like logically, it only makes sense if he was trying to dig there as a task. It was a deep well. You were digging deep, and maybe you weren't digging for that. You're digging for something else.
Yeah.
Like maybe it was a mining expedition or something.
Sure.
And so they're mining for something, and then they found this liquid, and that changed everything. So then they maybe had like a bowl that they were using for soup as a part of the, you know, like their meals at the dig site.
Right.
Like it would be something that would just be like a normal thing you're using to eat lunch with.
And then they found this, they discovered this liquid and someone called out and said, oh, hand me the ladle. Yeah. And someone grabbed the ladle out of the soup.
Yeah. Where they had a big pot. They made soup for the day or whatever. Yeah. There you go.
Perfect.
Now we have the story. So then everybody who works at the temple eats mostly soup.
Perfect.
Liquid diets, liquid shits.
But this type of thing, or soup is seen as a holiday food on very special holidays.
It's the thing that you would make
this soup. Yeah. You would have this very special soup to commemorate it, right?
Yeah.
That's the type of thing that I'm digging for. So I imagine the head of the order, the head of the religion, sort of,
you let me do that
walks,
for too long.
I did. I was just gonna see how long it took you to stop. The walks around with it in their hand at all times. That was sort of how I envisioned it. Like a tropier version of a kung fu master that walks around with their hands behind their back carrying a stick at all times. Yeah. That's how I had envisioned it as something that is always on their person.
Yeah.
They are never out of touch with it. Or never not in contact with it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's pretty clean and simple too, because it is building on a previous idea as well, which is often the, you know, we've talked before, is like, that's such a great approach. It's like, well, we already did an idea.
Yeah.
Let's build upon it and add another idea on top of it.
Yeah.
And bring things together because they work really well. All right. Well, let's move on to a little bit of frozen lasagna. How's that sound?
That sounds delicious, Kyle.
All right.
Tell me about your frozen lasagna. Put it in the microwave for me.
Okay. You didn't dig me in, but that's fine.
Ding.
Thank you. Bitch. So I'm going to bring back another idea from another episode.
Yeah.
And can you guess what episode it's going to be? The one, the only, The Burned. They're coming back. Our favorite idea of all time.
The bomb.
And specifically because The Burned have to burn off their pinky.
Yeah.
And they have to burn their pinky in lava, and then their pinky becomes like a, you know, a part of, you know, a burned whatever. But the first pinky of the first person who dipped it into the lava, who was the first person to basically say, I accept the fallen sun as my god.
Yeah.
Their pinky then becomes the sacred object because it's like, it is the symbol of, you know, why you do this, basically.
Nice.
And it's in a little case in the office of whoever, of, I forget what we called, the Cindered One, I think was the title of the head of the Burned Order.
Several years ago, I don't remember.
Yeah, this was actually 2 years ago now, I think. Yeah. This podcast been going for a long time. But yeah, that is, that's my thing. I was really stuck on the idea of it has to be someone's finger that is, they're dead, but it's their finger alone.
That's so cool. I like that.
I figured I should bring in The Burned because that literally is about the finger.
I like so, that.
Anyway, it's that, all about that, the that's over a minute. Now back to you. Give me your frozen lasagna. Ding.
Vampire hunters are a fantastic trope.
Abraham Lincoln was one.
He was indeed. Which, by the way, the shotgun axe, spectacular.
You need to watch that movie.
Kyle and I have determined that one of my superpowers is having an incredibly keen eye for movies that are so bad they're good. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is one of those movies. Not for nothing, part of the reason it is so bad it's good is because Abraham Lincoln famously chopped down a cherry tree in one swing. At some point in time during the movie, they never explain why, he takes the axe that he used to chop down the cherry tree and incorporates a shotgun into it, which is pretty great. So everyone should go watch that movie. It's fucking incredible.
That time does not count. You still have a minute to go.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Okay, go.
Vampire hunters are dope. I love vampire hunters. I think that
have you heard of the movie Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
I'm going to chop you down with one swing, motherfucker. It's very good.
There's this scene where he like he puts a shotgun on his axe.
No, it's revealed that he has a shotgun built into his axe. It comes out of nowhere, man. It's great.
Apologies. All right, back to the idea. Go.
The sacred objects here are two daggers that were made by the first vampire hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And the tips of the daggers actually, instead of coming to points made of metal, are the very tips of the daggers actually have the two canine fangs from the first vampire that they killed
built into it. I was like, yeah, that works.
And cool. So those daggers, and I like them because they're sacred objects that are still in use.
Cool. Well, that's those. Now let's move on to what stuck for you, sir.
The vampire tooth daggers are kind of cool. I didn't see that coming, but they're kind of cool. I'm going to stick with the scribal order. I think that's really that we sort of discovered with your initial idea of where every pen is sacred. I like that it's used by each person with the blood is the ink, their magnum opus as they write until they die. It came together really quickly and I think it's really interesting, and the implications for an order that is purely based on written word, and maybe they're silent. There's a lot of ways to play with it, but that's really what stuck for me. I'm going to think about that for a while.
We didn't really get into like talking about more about that order, but we could do a whole episode talking about I think because we were too focused on the core mechanism and the pens, and like it's all about the pens.
Because this episode's about sacred objects.
Yes, exactly. And I think that is the thing that probably stuck for me the most was it was the blood element. It was bringing in the blood and the pen, and then they write till they die. Like that was like a great like bump 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 that worked really well, and it was like super fast. I think that really worked. I think we did kind of a similar thing with like figuring out that the ladle is off of the soup.
Yeah.
It was like, where it's, you know, sometimes just having that backstory of like, why is this thing the way it is? And having it be mundane is such a good world building piece, especially if you're writing a book that, like, you know, when you are reading a novel and they have that moment of just like a subtle throwaway line about like, oh, we do this thing on this day. And, you know, maybe it's explained, maybe it's not, but you maybe just say, oh, because Saint whatever did that this way. Like, that's such a good little tidbit that works really well.
Yeah.
So bringing in that soup piece and that it was, you know, they were mining and that's how they found it. Like, I think giving that backstory really and
it
worked.
It was communal soup, because that's how else do you feed a whole bunch of workers is soup, right? Yeah. Like, that's a very easy way to do it.
Yeah. And I think the axe shotgun combo is probably like the best part of this whole episode, because it's incredibly sacred. But I think we had a couple good ones.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes. Thanks for listening. Bye. Goodbye.